of those living there, and they were submitted to regular abuse, regular repression. The French came, you know, they could just show up in those residences and kick the doors, pull the blankets of people sleeping. I mean, they did nasty things there. And that was what notorious, you know, notorious throughout France, you know, utilizing Africans from Mali, or even using that as a caricature, you know, to mean somebody who has no papers, you know, something like that.
Well,
and this is fresh in the memory of Africans
good.
In France. I think it would be good if we can organize around those issues, like call for the abolition for all the police controls, abolition for visa.
We have to wrap it up. We have to wrap it up now, Comrade Luizzi.
All right.
Because, for the imperialists, time is up. But let's build this revolutionary project. And I want to thank you again for bringing, you know, all of the information and knowledge to this discussion that you've just brought us. This is Africa Live. I'm Mali Ishatela. We've just talked with Comrade Luizzi Kinshasa, who is the Secretary General of the African Socialist International, and Africa Live, as you know, is a project of the African People's Socialist Party, Uhuru.
This is Africa Live.
We have on the phone a caller.
I don't understand, how is it okay and legal to bomb people on a daily basis all over the world, to starve people, and then when some airplanes fly into some towers, a guy gets off his medicine and starts shooting up the mall or something, then the world comes to an end.
Garvey's movement was a serious challenge to imperialism, because if Africans begin to work for our own interests, then we ain't working for theirs.
In the final analysis, white feminism just becomes, I don't know, a leftist feminist tool of colonial domination.
Mm. So this discussion has to happen.
This is Africa Live.
Raising up the question of African women in a way that contributes to our liberation and unification.
ABDEP sees our nursing school as an extension of what Marcus Garvey established in the early 1920s with the Black Cross nurses. Our nurses are being trained to not only again be nurses, but to be African international.
This is Africa Live.
I sympathize with these people so much that I hope that as a consequence of what has happened to them, they will be able to look at the rest of the world as humans as well. They will be able to assume that the next victim of a drone attack in Afghanistan may also have parents, may also have community people who will suffer and cry for them as well.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
I'm rubber.
I'm rubber.
I Argument about stealing. Somebody don't take something we belong to another person. Then you go here. You be thief.
I don't be thief.
You be rogue.
I don't be rogue.
You be steal.
I don't be steal.
You be.
Just call in numbers to listen by phone. Well, Uhuru, President Burt, as the president of the Npedum branch in St. Petersburg, Florida, what kind of campaigns have you coordinated, and what campaign are you coordinating right now?
I have coordinated the Stop the Police Tape campaign. We got more than 1,000 people to sign the petition demanding an end to the deadly chases. The chases they carry out in St. Pete would never be tolerated in the white community. One African being chased had an expired license, as far as we can tell. That is the only possible reason the police had to chase him. His name was Joshua Hall, and he died in September 2012. So we took the position that we have to stop the police chases. Excuse me.
Yes.
Okay, the system is the problem, and we must take a stand and take control of our African people, make sure that we have a better life. What made me take a stand is I saw a police chase in person, and I couldn't tell who was being chased. No lights were on, no sirens was on, and they were all unmarked cars. And it was 2:30. It was time for children to get out of school. And I said, this needs to stop. And the same time I said that, I met Npedum. And Npedum spoke to this problem. And that's when I took a stand to say that I should be in this organization so that we can stop the police cases, stop the brutality that is going on with the black people.
Yes. Uhuru, yeah, we really appreciate the leadership that Npedum has showed, especially through the Npedum St. Pete branch, you know, which is the founding city of the Uhuru movement, the hometown of Chairman Omali Ishatela and the birthplace of the African People's Socialist Party, to just show the leadership and the precedent for the African community to get organized and resist. And we know St. Pete as the city of African resistance. We know it as the city that took a stand. The whole African community took a stand against the police after the shooting of Tyron Lewis and countless other young Africans murdered by and terrorized by the St. Petersburg police, resulting in a long period of no murders of young Africans. And we know that every campaign that has been waged there in St. Petersburg has been successful. So we really unite with, you know, what you're putting out about the police chase campaign, and we know it will be successful, just seeing the support of the community through the petition process. What about the current campaign about stopping armed police from entering schools?
My position and the position of the organization, a gun is an extension of the person that owns it. With this extension comes responsibility. If a teacher had a bad morning at home and a student pushes him in the same type of position that he just left his house, and with a gun, his reaction might be that I could respond with a gun because I have it fully accessible and I have, through the system, an okay to fire this weapon. We can't have that. There's other ways to keep guns out of the school, metal detectors, buzz-ins, whatever it takes, but not armed officers. We already are oppressed people. If you brought guns, we would be training our children to be oppressed. That's unheard of, and we can't take that stance. We can't say it's okay to put armed guards in our school with our young children.
Absolutely. And it's you know, history, even recent history, has shown us how Africans have been terrorized and abused within the colonial education system. Could you tell us a little bit about the case of Jaisha Scott in St. Petersburg?
Jaisha was 6 years old. She was in first grade or kindergarten, but it took armed police officers, three of them, to wrestle her down. Now, we talking a little girl. You talking people that are over 5-6 feet tall, to handcuff her and take her off to jail. Now, isn't that ridiculous?
Yes.
I mean, there is no way that that situation should have ever happened. Number one, it traumatized the child. She was crying, she was screaming, she was yelling, but people still were trying to hold her down, grab her arms, to twist her arms, to put her in handcuffs. A five-year-old or six-year-old, how much strength does it take to say, sit down, be quiet, I'm going to call your mother? Some type of leadership other than handcuffing a person and sending them to jail. We can't have it. It's going to happen more and more. There's at least five incidents that I can name where this has happened. One incident in Sarasota where a police officer was in the school, asked the young girl to pick up something like crumbs or a piece of cake off the floor. She didn't pick it up fast enough. She didn't pick up enough of it. It continued on and on until he finally grabbed her, pushed her up against the lockers, broke her arm, and then put her in jail.
That's horrible. And I know any parent hearing this be horrified if that happened to their children, and you know, even worse, just the threats and the daily attacks in the community by the police. You know, this was something that the parents of the children who were murdered in Connecticut in the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut recently, you know, never had to worry about. This was in an affluent white suburb where a mentally ill white male walked in and murdered the children, and now they're imposing so much, consequences to the African community based on that incident and other incidents where, white people have murdered other white people by imposing enhanced gun control or calling for much more deep, gun control, especially in the African community, and also to put armed guards and armed police into schools. So what kind of response are you getting from the community in St. Pete and even in other places where Impedum is active to the stand that Impedum is taking against the armed police entering our schools?
Well, we want the immediate withdrawal of the U.S. police from our oppressed and exploited communities right away.
Yes.
You know, we don't need that type of activity. You know, and that's from all our branches. All our branches unite to say we are not here for police officers to try to make us do things. Make us. If the system would change, and that's what we have to look at. If Obama took a stance and said no more oppressed people with police officers in their neighborhood, I think the community, in fact, I know it would be a difference. It wouldn't be an area where we would have to worry about getting up in the morning, seeing policemen running through our neighborhood, people getting arrested, 10 cops to give somebody a ticket for a seatbelt. Unheard of. And all that is to try to make you afraid to live in your neighborhood, afraid to stand up and say, this is not what I want for myself or my children, and especially our children.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent that the community is really behind that, too, because, you know, it's just such a strong history of the African community coming together and solving problems collectively and being able to stand up against the police. So do you foresee, you know, this struggle being successful and future struggles against not just the St. Petersburg police, but the police in every community where the African community is united, especially under the leadership of INPEDOM and the African People's Socialist Party. You know, what do you foresee happening as a result of these campaigns?
Well, we hope to get more people. If we get more people to join our organization, to stand up with us, we have a 4 o'clock meeting every Sunday where we ask people to come out and unite with us, stand up and let the community know, let the police know that we are an organization that will not have police in our community. You know, it would never stand up in a white community. I pass through there, you don't see any police hardly, but you come to our neighborhood and they're everywhere.
Right.
So if we could get people to come out and unite with us at our 4 o'clock meeting, then we're going to have a convention in March 23rd and 24th, and that also is a time for our whole community, our whole area. It's going to be international. We're having people from all across the world come into St. Petersburg to make a plea to show that we all unite, that we want a better life for African people.
Uh-huh.
So we hope to get people out to that.
How can people get more information about the INPEDOM convention?
We have a website. We're on our INPEDOM website, and we're sending out flyers. We're going to have posters out. If you go to our website, and I'm sure you're going to give that out, we're going to have, we got an area just for the convention, and people could sign that and click on it. So it's a green button there that says click. And once you click into that, you open up the whole convention process.
Uhuru, and that website is inpdum.org. That's INPDUM.org. And you can find all the information you need about attending and about housing and transportation and the program for the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement Convention, which will be held March 23rd and 24th of this year in St. Petersburg, Florida, the city of African resistance. We want to remind people, if they're listening and they have a question for the St. Petersburg branch president of INPEDOM, Bert Brooks, email us at dj@uhururadio.com and we'll read your question on the air. We only have a few more minutes left during this interview, so now would be a great time to contribute a question. And President Bert, we're just wondering, you know, how can people get involved in St. Pete in the current campaign? What can people do right now?
Well, they can come straight to the Uhuru House, and we're located at 1245 18th Avenue South. And you can just come there anytime. We're open 9 to 5, but there's somebody there all times of the day and night. And you can just come, and we'll give you a tour of the building. We'll explain what we do, how we do it. People do not take advantage of our Uhuru House. We have places that you could have family reunions. You could come in. You could just talk to people. We have a nurse that comes every other Thursday for HIV. I mean, we do all kinds of things at the Uhuru House, and people should take advantage of it. Like I say, we're there at 4 p.m. today. I'll be there. You know, we'll sign people up right away to get in. I mean, we're always looking. We're always out on the streets at different communities. We went out to Jordan Park. We're at different areas and we sign people up. But the best thing to do is just come in. Just come in and say what we look for in the community is people to tell us what happened. We're not out there every day. So if you see something that you think is an injustice, I tell people sometimes when you make the simplest thought, like, why my child didn't graduate this year, that's a political thought.
Yes.
And you should come out and say it. You should come to us and say what you're thinking, why it happened, and see what kind of response we get. You might be the one to give us a new petition that we need to search out the answer for.
Uhuru. That's excellent because, you know, it's so important that the community there and the community in other cities like Oakland and Chicago and Philadelphia and many, many others, London and in Europe, throughout Europe, that have INPDUM branches, those are, you know, functioning organizations and places where the African community can come to solve, you know, even the smallest questions like that and open it up to the larger political questions and come together as a community to really take control of the community. And we are in unconditional solidarity with that from the Uhuru Solidarity Movement. You know, we're organizing in the white community to build solidarity with the right of African people to resist colonial oppression and all of these things that we've talked about, from the police to the schools, you know, to the healthcare system, which we're going to be talking about in the next portion of the show. And, you know, our North Americans or white people from the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and our contacts, welcome to attend these Sunday meetings in St. Pete. At the Uhuru House?
Yes. Yes, we have had many different meetings where the Solidarity people have come and united with us. They had a convention just 2 weeks ago, and they had a big turnout, and it was just so good to see that there's other white people that believe that we are oppressed, that we do need our freedom. Uhuru.
Yes, Uhuru. Absolutely, and I was at that convention of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and it was just incredible to see people from all over, from, you know, every region of the country, and people tuning in from all over the world via Uhuru News and Uhuru Radio, who are getting to be part of this movement to build the organization. You know, the African People's Socialist Party is leading organization around the world, including INPDUM and the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, to organize, you know, the African Revolution, and we are so honored to be part of that through our organizational relationship with the Uhuru movement. And we really appreciate you putting that out and being on the show today, President Burt. And is there anything else you'd like to say on today's show?
Well, I just actually want to say, stop the police chases, stop the preschool, the prison pipeline, stop the murders and harassment of African people by the police, and fight for the economic development of us. Thank you, Uhuru.
Uhuru. Thank you very much, President Burt Brooks from the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, St. Petersburg branch. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll have an interview with International President Diop Olugbala, with Salima Cunningham from Philadelphia, and Lisa Davis, the Black is Back Coalition Health Committee Chair, about the case of Baby Dylan, a victory over the attacks by the hospitals on the African community. Uhuru, stay tuned. This is Reparations in Action on UhuruRadio.com. Uhuru.
Uhuru.
true. We're here with International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement President Diop Olugbala, and he leads the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, or INPDUM, worldwide, and he is joining us here to discuss the case of Baby Dylan in Philadelphia, along with Salima Cunningham, who is the aunt of the mother of Baby Dylan, and also Lisa Davis from the Black is Back Coalition Health Committee. Uhuru, thank you everyone for being on.
Thank you.
Uhuru, thank you.
Uhuru, President Diop, if you could just explain briefly for us about INPDUM, what your role in it is, and you know how it takes on cases such as that of Baby Dylan.
Yeah, first of all, I want to again express my appreciation to yourself and the comrades of the African People's Solidarity Committee for having us on Reparations in Action. And in terms of INPDUM, we are a revolutionary mass organization founded in 1991 by the African People's Socialist Party. And the fundamental task of INPDUM is to fight for the democratic rights of African people around the world. We are an activist organization. We are a fighting organization. And we want to achieve the ability to be a self-determined and self-governing people. And when we see offenses like that which were committed against Baby Dylan and his family, we see it as our responsibility to organize the community in defense of not only an individual, but also as a means of organizing the entire community, because quiet as it's kept, what happened to Baby Dylan and his family is what is happening to black families across the country and around the world. So, you know, that's in a nutshell why we found it so important to get involved in this question. And, you know, just really quick, because INPDUM has a reputation, especially in Philly, for taking a strong stance against police brutality and the police containment of the African community, which is something that we definitely do for obvious reasons. But part of the significance of the Baby Dylan struggle was that it enabled INPDUM to carry out other aspects of our revolutionary national democratic program, particularly around the question of health care, which is just one of the venues or ways in which U.S. imperialism attacks the African community. So we saw the Baby Dylan struggle as being important for that reason as well.
Uhuru, thank you, President Diop. And I should also interject, too, that INPDUM has won that struggle, that Baby Dylan was released from the hospital. And Salima, I'd like to ask you to explain to us, as a member of Baby Dylan's family and, you know, the aunt of the mother of Baby Dylan, what was it that led to the kidnapping of your niece's newborn son by the Pennsylvania hospital?
Well, the rationale that they used was they've kind of exploited my niece. Her name is Jade, and her sickness, which is sickle cell anemia. And sickle cell anemia has no cure, and the disease is only managed by narcotics, which treat the pain. So in other words, most diseases may have some sort of medication to actually counter the actual disease, and sickle cell doesn't. They just treat sickle cell with narcotics and opiates, and Jade is prescribed morphine. So the doctor's rationale was that the baby was born with morphine in his system and needed to be given these extreme doses of morphine around the clock to counter withdrawal. Now, that may very well happen in some cases. You have mothers that are addicted to, like, illegal substances, and they may use those tactics. But the problem that we had was when the hospital refused to furnish any toxicology reports or anything that would demonstrate why they felt that this was necessary, and also to corroborate their suspicion of his condition. So in their refusal to do that, that obviously made us very skeptical. Jade had another child, and Jade's sister also suffers from sickle cell, and she has a child. And this extreme action was not taken. So again, when that was questioned, that's when they began their reign of terror against our family and when they finagled this court order to force this treatment on Dylan.
Uhuru, thank you. And I know that that's, you know, something that happens throughout the African community in hospitals every day, and it's just such an attack. So I wanted to ask you, Salima, and Lisa and Diop as well, who would ever like to answer this. How did NPDOM as an organization come to hear about this case and step in and organize this successful campaign to free baby Dylan?
This is Salima speaking. I contacted the organization. I was aware of the organization and some other initiatives that they've spearheaded within the community. And so I reached out to them, and I reached out to some other prominent organizations that you would think would rush to aid a family in this sort of situation. And we didn't gain a response from those other organizations like the ACLU of Philadelphia, NAACP of Philadelphia. Every single Congress and state representative within our district, which is who you're supposed to contact, all of those people were completely useless. They did not help us, and they didn't even provide us referrals, which is the least that can be done in a situation like that. You know, these are the people that we vote for, and these are the organizations that are in place to give a voice to people that are disenfranchised. But unfortunately, we did not gain any assistance from them at all whatsoever. We did, however, gain assistance from DIOP and NPDOM, who allowed us to voice what was going on, and they also took it very seriously and began this campaign to spread the message about the community.
And I do want to add, Comrade Harris, NPDOM did not act in isolation. In fact, we belong to a coalition known as the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations. And we know that there's Comrade Lisa Davis, who is the chair of the Healthcare Committee of the Black is Back Coalition. This is right up her and that committee's alley. And so we immediately reached out to Sister Lisa and, requesting that Black is Back get involved with the struggle, which proved to be a very important move on all of our part. So I know, Sister Lisa, you probably want to say some things about Black is Back's involvement.
Yes, and I want to say in August of 2012, the Black is Back Coalition had a convention in Newark, New Jersey, and at that convention they were talking about and formulating various committees that needed to carry out the very important work of revolution and for, you know, fighting against the oppression of this U.S. capitalist system, which we know is a worldwide affront to people of color or people who are human the world over. But at that convention, I noticed that there wasn't very much being said about health. And my background is that I've had the opportunity to learn about wonderful healing modalities. And in my journey of learning about these healing modalities, I would be visiting people in the hospitals and had the chance to see firsthand the atrocities that are being committed by the so-called medical profession. And I feel that whereas the Black liberation struggle has been very, very strong and very, very up on what's been going on with police brutality and the judicial system, we needed to have a strong body to confront terrorism and the medical abuses of the so-called medical profession. And so when I put that forward, I was so glad that it was very well embraced, and then I was asked to chair it. And part of the mission of the Black is Back Coalition, of the healthcare committee within the Black is Back Coalition, is to build a strong network of progressive, revolutionary people who have who are challenging this paradigm of what I call death care management by using poisonous, harmful chemicals. And we have to be very aware and very cognizant of the extremely racist history of the medical profession and how they have exploited our community and many times exploited our communities and our children with experimentation. And it's not just the Tuskegee syphilis study that we are so aware of, but they have so frequently, in so many ways, experimented on us and on our children. And when I heard about baby Dylan, I was just livid. But even more importantly, I was glad that we were beginning to build an infrastructure which could challenge something like this and provide any kind of support that we wanted. And what was so key about this is that you don't have a whole lot of time to sit there and say, okay, well, we'll take this and we'll discuss it next week and we'll bring it forward here. In the meantime, you had this little baby, this newborn infant that was being injected by the hospital with morphine, around-the-clock morphine, morphine that is known to have such horrible effects, horrible, horrible side effects on adults, let alone infants. And so every day that was going on, that prevented a serious, serious challenge to that little baby. And I am just so glad, first of all, that the family was willing to reach out of all the work that they did. But I was just glad to see the formation of an infrastructure, of a network being built that could deal with that and that was willing to do it.
Uhuru, I appreciate that, Lisa, and just what the work that the Black is Back Coalition and the Black is Back Healthcare Committee is taking on. And if I could also just ask you, why is the question for Africans to have their own healthcare institutions in their own hands so important? It sounds like you've described that this is the work that Black is Back Healthcare Committee is taking on. But in this crisis of imperialism, why is this so necessary right now?
Well, first of all, I'd say we have to really understand the history of racism in the medical profession. Like I said, we tend to know a lot more about it in terms of the so-called judicial system, but it has a virulent history when it comes to dealing with our people. So if we understand that, like for example, modern-day gynecology, the father of modern-day gynecology is James Marion Sims. Yet this is a person who had enslaved black women and experimented on them, would cut them open without giving them any kind of sedative or anything like that. He would conduct all of these experiments on them against their will. Yet he today is considered the father of modern-day gynecology, and yet we hear statistics such as black women might get breast cancer less than white women, but we will die from breast cancer at a much higher rate than white women. So when we understand that history, those results should not be a shock to us at all. But even more so, let's just for one example pretend that this is a profession that has our best interests at heart. Let's just try to pretend that for one second. With what they call medicine, with what they call healthcare, where they are pushing these toxic, toxic poisons on everybody, on everyone. You know, so I don't even think it's so much that white people have better healthcare, but they will get better treatment than we will because of racism. That is not saying a lot at all. That just goes to show that this state of health care is in such a degenerative state that it is really in a horrible state. And you add on top of that racism and imperialism and you know, a for-profit system, and we have a deadly mix with our society bearing the brunt of it. And especially what is also very important to continue to emphasize and to get out there is that there are other modalities, proven modalities, that show that the body can heal once we are given the certain things that we need. But we have a for-profit death care system that wants to try to control all this information. You know, when I hear about the revolution will not be televised, I think about what that means on all levels. We are never going to get the information that we need if we are going to seek, you know, the permission of the mainstream media or of this, you know, government to put it out there. That is never going to happen. And there are so many things that we can do that do not cost a lot or anything like that, that are natural, that are safe, that we can really use to begin to administer to each other and to ourselves. And we have to know about those modalities. But just as importantly, we have to keep on our toes about the realities of what is going on with this so-called health care system. And Baby Dylan, and I know that this is happening on a very, very wide scale, but anybody who would sit there and inject morphine into an innocent baby and call that health care, that is just atrocious. And we have to fight against it at every time.
Yes. Yes.
We want to appreciate what Lisa just said, because what she's describing is just another way in which colonialism as a social system impacts on African people. It's a political question. What happened to Dylan was a political question. As we know, what happened to Dylan and his mother never happens to white babies or white women. In fact, the sickle cell anemia, part of the reason why the only treatment for sickle cell anemia is that of morphine and opiates is because it is, you know, seen by the healthcare industry as a quote-unquote black disease. And, of course, the foul treatment that the family received, following the forced dosages of morphine is just another symptom or indication of this colonial relationship that African people have, not only to this government or to the healthcare system, but to the police who worked in defense of the hospital, and the court system that issued the motion that enabled the hospital to carry these this drugging of the baby out. You know, we're looking at a social system as a whole, which was built on slavery and colonialism, and to this day is motivated only by profit and through a colonial oppression and exploitation of African people. So the only time when we see any type of so-called rights or progress in the condition of black people, African people, is when we stand up and we resist. Had Sister Salima not reached out to NPDub and the Black is Back Coalition seeking help, then I guarantee you Dylan would still be on morphine right now, if he would even still be alive to this day. It was only because the family decided to take a stand, and that's part of the reason why I really appreciate Sister Salima and the family, because they decided not to just lay over and allow for this hospital to do what they normally get away with doing, but they said, we want to fight back, and it is through organized resistance. The hospital did not want to release Dylan and his mother, but they had no choice because of the imminent political consequences that came with keeping him under their custody. And that should be a lesson to African people, that when we stand up, when we struggle, we win. And we have to build the capacity to struggle all the time around every single question until we have won real power over our own lives.
Uhuru, thank you, President Diop, and thank you, Lisa, and thank you, Salima. I just wanted to ask you, President Diop, if you also wanted to take this opportunity to put out, you know, how people who are interested in supporting this case can continue their stand in defending the democratic rights of the African community by building and attending the NPDUM convention.
Yeah, so, and all the work we're doing, you know, again, it revolves around organization. When we say we must struggle, we must resist, the resistance must be organized. And the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement on March 23rd and 24th in St. Petersburg, Florida, we'll be holding our international convention, the theme of which is One Africa, One Nation, Build Revolutionary Organization to Protect and Defend Our Own. And the task of this convention is to organize the broad sectors of the African community, no matter where we're located, whether we're in London, England, Sierra Leone, West Africa, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. But we also want to organize every sector of the community in terms of whether you're man, woman, child, student, worker, gay, straight, it doesn't matter. We want to build the type of organization that brings every sector of our community into organized struggle and resistance. That's what this convention is about. And part of our goal, in fact, if all goes according to the plan, Sister Lisa, who will be speaking on a workshop, a panel discussion dealing with the attack being made on African women through the healthcare system And one of the goals that we have set for ourselves at this convention is to build an international healthcare, a community control of healthcare committee, through which NPDOM can carry out a worldwide type of resistance around the question like that of baby Dylan, because as we know, it's going on everywhere. So this is just part of what one could expect to experience at the upcoming convention. And we're dealing with other important questions, including that of police brutality and overall state repression, immigration, and a variety of other issues. So definitely, if you are inspired by the story of Baby Dylan and the victory of the Baby Dylan campaign, then you want to. That's just another reason why you need to be a part of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, and why you need to be at our upcoming convention. Again, it's scheduled for March 23rd and 24th, St. Petersburg, Florida. You can check us out on our website, which is npdub.org. That's I. N as in nation, P as in peoples, D as in democratic, U as in Uhuru, M as in movement.org. And you can also check out our blog, npdubresistance.wordpress.com. And if you'd like to contact us by phone, you can do so by calling 215-459-7551. Again, that's 215-459-7551.
Uhuru, thank you. And I know, you know, we're really going to be pushing from the Uhuru Solidarity Movement to build solidarity with this convention and for winning North Americans to attend as well, you know, through building and organizing in the white community. And also, you know, continuing to take out campaigns like the Campaign to Defend Baby Dylan and other campaigns from NPDOM and the Black is Back Coalition, to win solidarity in the white community with the African community's right to resist. So I'd like to thank you, Uhuru.
May I just... I just want to add one thing in conclusion.
Of course, yes.
And that is how they will use this medical terrorism when a parent has a child and the parent says, you know something, I don't want to use that recommended protocol that could be so detrimental to the health of my child. They will have state services come in and many times remove the child from a parent. That's atrocious. That is absolutely atrocious. So for anybody who might be listening, or if you know of anyone who have children and their parents are very concerned about their health and they're very concerned about the poisons that they are being injected with, they need to know that there's a body out there that will be more than willing to support them and to help them resist. Because with Baby Dylan, we won this struggle, but the ultimate struggle is far from over, because we know it's going on all over the country, and they need to know that we need to fight this systemically, because I recognize, I believe in a parent's right to say no to harmful drugs or to harmful protocols, that everybody should have the right to tell the medical profession, no, we do not want to go that route. But they will make you feel, they will make you feel so pressured, they will make you feel incompetent, they have such disrespect for your culture, and that has to be challenged. So we won this initial struggle, but the fight with Baby Dylan is going to be won, or in that case, I should say, and the issues that the very important issues that it raises has to be also fought and challenged systemically. And again, I want to applaud the family of Baby Dylan, Sister Salima, and her brother, because that took such tremendous courage and guts. And I'm so glad that you just continued on. And people have to know that there are people out there willing to stand with them to fight for what is right.
Not
all. Uhuru, thank you so much, Lisa and President Diop and Salima, for being on the show today. And we want to continue to work in solidarity to push forward and build and attend the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, March 23rd and 24th in St. Petersburg, Florida. Uhuru, thank you.
Uhuru.
Uhuru, so that was the interview that was pre-recorded with President Diop Olugbala of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, NPDOM member Salima Cunningham, who is the aunt of Jade Nelson, Baby Dylan's mother in Philadelphia, who won the victory based on the struggle of the African community and the family of Baby Dylan and the whole community coming together with NPDOM and the Black is Back Health Committee. And the representative in that interview was also Lisa Davis. So we did have a comment during the interview, which unfortunately we can't pose this question to the guests, but we did want to read this comment that came in from Stephanie in St. Petersburg. Uhuru, I want to salute NPDOM and the family's victory and appreciate the courage of Baby Dylan's family for taking on this important struggle. I have a question for the guests. As I followed the media reports of the case, the media made it sound as if the family was not really working with NPDOM. I understand that this is a regular tactic of the media of the state, which strives to undermine the organization and unity that exists in the African community, but I was wondering if President Diop could address this issue of the way the media portrayed the case and the importance of the African media and the burning spear. Unfortunately, President Diop couldn't be available for being interviewed on the show live, but I'll just say that that is the importance of the African community through the Uhuru movement and Uhuru News and Uhuru Radio, Uhuru TV, controlling its own media, being able to put out the perspective of the African working class in this struggle to print the truth from the perspective of the African community as it's happening. The support that came in literally worldwide for the family of Baby Dylan really came in rapidly, just really built people calling in through the call that was on Uhuru News and also on the new NPDOM.org blog, the Right to Resist African Resistance blog. People calling in, emailing in, donating, offering, you know, help in any way. With the Baby Dylan case, as with many cases of NPDOM and campaigns, you know, has been a really successful aspect of the Uhuru movement being able to have built its own media and continuing to put out the voice of the International African Revolution through Uhuru Radio and Uhuru News and the live broadcast on live stream of Uhuru TV, which I hope people got to tune in last night and see the St. Petersburg Kids Got Talent show, which was amazing. Children from St. Petersburg, Florida, in the Uhuru House, part of an African People's Education and Defense Fund program led by APEDF St. Pete Programs Coordinator Princess Williams. It was such a success. Hope people were able to donate online. You can still go and donate online at apedf.org. And if you have the day off from work on Martin Luther King Day tomorrow, January 21st, you can get involved in Oakland, California, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, through the Uhuru Furniture Martin Luther King Days of Service. There'll be an MLK Day film showing and volunteer opportunity starting at 9 a.m. in Oakland, California, at the Nebel Proctor Library at 6501 Telegraph Avenue in Oakland. You can contact them at apedf.volunteer@yahoo.com or call 510-676-5041. There'll be videos of the civil rights movements and Martin Luther King, and learn all about the African People's Education and Defense Fund and what you can do. And if you're in Philadelphia, where we're broadcasting from today, there's going to be a full day of service for volunteers to get involved in the Uhuru Furniture work as part of the African People's Education and Defense Fund economic development projects, starting at 10 a.m. at the Doubletree Hotel Orchestra Room. It's at 237 South Broad Street. It's at Broad and Locust. And in the orchestra room at the Doubletree Hotel, there'll be the volunteer overview, videos of Martin Luther King and the civil rights struggle, and videos on the African People's Education Defense Fund programs. And you can get involved doing door hanging, drops, putting up posters, helping clean up and maintain the store, all kinds of different work to support the African People's Education Defense Fund. If you're interested in getting involved in that, go to Uhuru Furniture today or call 215-546-1485. It's going to be a really excellent day, you know, not just remembering or honoring Martin Luther King, but doing the work that continues the struggle for African self.
Does not mean people making, creating a false unity with the existing crowd of so-called leaders who have so harmed movement politics, especially during this period in history. And I think that's very important as we anticipate the exit of this first black president. We should, as we try to reinvigorate a movement, we should not carry into the process the attitude of making amends with people who have committed the cardinal sin. I mean, there are some sins that are unforgivable. Siding with the man with the kill list, the president of preventive detention, the man who actually ignited the austerity movement, austerity politics in this country in 2009. These are not forgivable, and our obligation is not to allow the corporate media to define what the issues are and who has the right to speak, but to do that ourselves and say who does not have the right to call themselves part of the black left.
Glenn Ford, I really want to express my appreciation for this discussion and for your presence and for all of the work that you've done, for the number of years that you've done it. I know that you've done it under real serious adverse conditions in terms of, you know, resources and for yourself and even health and things like that. And I think it's just so important that you've been there and that you've fought against the superstitions and other kinds of fantastic notions that have been imposed, or the attempts have been made to impose on our communities and our movement. Again, I thank you very much, and all of our listeners, of course, should be aware of your existence on blackagendareport.com. Many of the people who've come to our movement have come as a consequence, and I think there's been a I think that there are also people who've discovered you as a consequence of the work that we're doing in the trenches as well. Let's build the Black Agenda Report. Let's build a real ability to challenge the hegemony of the ruling class in this war of ideas that we're engaged in. Let's build the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations that will should go to the trenches and bring the masses of people into the struggle so that a movement will be something different than a collection of names of important people who may have done something, may have done something in the past, but who have eliminated themselves as any kind of real features, factors, progressive, important factors in the movement of the day. So I just want to thank you very much for being with us, Glenn, and I look forward to talking to you again and to the next meeting of the Black is Back Coalition for Social Justice, Peace, and Reparations. Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chairman. Black is back.
Splendid. Black is back.
Opportunity, Chairman. Black is back.
Splendid. Black is back.
We live in a world that is constructed of the theft of the resources, both material and human, of African and other people as a consequence of its existence. Stealing black labor, black bodies, black territory, of the rape of Asia and Latin America. We live in a world that is constructed of the theft of the resources, both material and human, of African and other people as a consequence